out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 23rd of May 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live today at radioarian.com because we have with us Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, how are you doing today?
It is extremely humid here in Pittsburgh. It's humid to the point where, you know, you may hear my air conditioning go off in the background and there's no way I'm turning it off. There is simply no way. I mean, if it destroyed the broadcast, I wouldn't turn it on.
It will damage the broadcast if you leave your aircon on. I'm hoping you haven't.
Well, I tell you right now, it's not going to happen because it is miserable here.
I think we prefer you in puddles of sweat, Matt. You need to be dripping in puddles of sweat and sat there in your shorts, I'm afraid.
My poor cats, you know, they're in the basement. Oh, this is awful.
I'm a hard producer.
It came out of nowhere.
I'm a hard producer. Well, let's get into what we're going to be talking about today anyway. We don't need to be hearing about your aircon and all the torturous problems recording podcasts there in the
heat. Life.
We want to be talking about Trump's trade war with China. And in particular, this is in the news at the moment with Huawei and Google dropping Huawei, which is quite an important thing because Huawei, I mean, they make modems, they make mobile phones, they're involved with apps, all sorts of things. And you know, that's very serious that Google are not going to work anymore on Huawei technology. But what we're going to get into today is what this is all about, because it's got very, very murky and very complicated as to just the reason for all of this, because it's all tied in together. And we'll start with a report from Peterson's Institute for International Economics. State-owned enterprises, prominent players in key sectors of the Chinese economy, often function as another mechanism through which foreign firms are forced to transfer technology in order to gain market access. A well-known example occurred in the early 2000s, when China was building out its energy grid to meet booming demand, and General Electric sought to enter this important market. GE soon encountered the reality that power generation in China is dominated by these SOEs, a position perpetuated by the regulatory structure of the industry. The top executives of these firms are effectively appointed by the Chinese Communist Party, as are all top executives of major Chinese state-owned enterprises, and their appointment is driven in part by the extent to which their management of their firms contributes to the party's objectives. If the party wants to create an indigenous Chinese manufacturing industry capable of producing high-tech products for energy plants, like advanced turbines that can compete with GE and Siemens, then the head of a Chinese power company, sensitive to this objective, can insist that any supplier of turbines transfer valuable technology to indigenous Chinese suppliers, even if this condition raises prices for his own firm, reduces product availability and reliability, and limits the options for his customers. As the Chinese market is too big to ignore, GE and its multinational competitors all realize that the short-term costs of refusing to play by Chinese rules are quite high, since if one firm refuses to play, another is likely to acquiesce. I mean, what this is saying is that you really can't get around it. If you want to deal with China, then you have to give China the technology. Would I be right in making that assessment, Matt?
I need the listeners to know that I've turned my air conditioning off. So if I go silent,
good man,
you know what happened.
You've melted.
This
melted
is
into a puddle.
This is the sacrifice I make for our people. I want you guys to know this. But what you just read here, and this is why I have it leading off, is the whole case that many administrations, not just this one, have that the case that they've made against China. The foreign direct investment law says if you're going to come into China, if you're going to take advantage of labor, you're going to take advantage of this humongous market, which is, you know, newly, you know, far more significant than even it was 5 years ago, then you have to pay. And you have to pay through a certain amount of, you know, percentage of Chinese ownership in the firm. And that automatically means a certain technology transfer. And this is the whole case. They're claiming that we shouldn't have to do this. We should be able to control where we go. And there should be no discrimination, which is, of course, the WTO norm between Chinese and non-Chinese firms, which is, by the way, the core of globalism, that there can be no discrimination between a national firm and a foreign firm. And this is really the whole case. And because it said China's too big to ignore, they could do as they please. And it's easier for them just to do it and not worry about it, like it says here about GE and other companies, than and fighting them in a court system that they're not going to win. Yeah, they could go to the WTO. They could do what they want. But when you're this large and this successful, and successful with state-owned enterprises, proving that they are very competitive and have always been, you could do this kind of thing. This is why China is successful. And this is what the Americans are complaining about. That's why this, what you just read, is extremely important. This is at the heart of the whole thing.
Well, really, I mean, you should keep the technology to your own country. I don't agree with sharing all this technology all around the world. I mean, because the people that created that technology, they were standing on the shoulders of other people, other white people. And this technology has just been filtered off everywhere. So I don't agree with that in the first place. But that means...
But this is where China and Trump agree. Because both Trump and the Chinese will say, if you agree with that, and there's definitely a great good case to be made for it, you know, Western companies created this stuff, then don't invest in China. Then invest at home, invest in the United States. Stay, keep the capital home. This is what Trump is saying. And the Chinese are saying the same thing. But if you're going to come here, this is how it's going to be. If you don't want to share the technology, don't come here. That's the argument.
So Trump should really be investing in America and getting these American firms to do it. But that's not what's happening. He started up a trade war with these tariffs, which is basically just hurting these American companies. This report comes from Sputnik, and this is about actually the U.S.-China trade talks. Ahead of the talks, Donald Trump fired off a series of tweets in which he claimed that the higher tariffs would bring far more wealth to our country than even a phenomenal deal of the traditional kind, adding that it was much easier and quicker to impose tariffs than to negotiate a deal. Now, that seems very lazy to me, Matt. What do you make of this?
Well, it's unfortunately, as of right now, it's simply incorrect. Another article, which we'll be dealing with later, we don't really have to deal with it because I have so many here. Another Sputnik article, how U.S.-China trade war backfires on American companies, proves that he's wrong. It's just that sales is now down from these firms. Apple is seeing very weak sales first quarter of 2019, and very conveniently, they blame it on the Chinese situation. They've downgraded their revenue forecast from like $93 billion to $84 billion, and they claim that it's mostly in China that it's come down. Car sales in China have fallen by almost 10% for the first time in 20 years. Chinese buyers have not bought nearly as many, like Ford's, for example. This has been a 25% drop. That's going to go up for the rest of this year. The sales are going to go down. I mean, the percentage of the drop is going to go up. It's simply incorrect. It hasn't worked out that way. The one thing that Trump is right about is that, don't go to China if you don't want to deal with it. Stay in America and invest here. That was part of his campaign promise. But to think that this is going to enrich the United States, at least the way he's going about it, is so far completely false. Sales are way down.
It would do in the long term if he invested in the American companies and if they kept all their technology for America, then it would. But that's not what he's talking about doing. And besides this, we've also got the Chinese central bank now devaluing the yuan. They've actually devalued it by 0.6%. the People's Bank of China said on Tuesday it had decided to devalue the yuan's exchange rate to the US dollar by 0.6% amidst the ongoing trade war with the United States. The new exchange rate set by the bank amounts to 6.8365 yuan per US dollar, while a day earlier it was 6.7954 yuan per dollar. The People's Bank of China has been devaluing the yuan since 2015, which has been viewed by many experts as a tool to stimulate the country's exports. During the trade talks with China, Washington many times said that it would impose new tariffs on Beijing in the event of the yuan being further devalued. So what's happening here, Matt? What happens when the yuan is further devalued, and why does Trump not want that?
Well, the key thing here is that the Chinese government controls the central bank. This is why they didn't melt down in 1997. And same thing for Taiwan, by the way. This is an absolutely central notion. So that means the state, who has a controlling interest in a lot of these big firms, can have a monetary policy in their interest. They're not fighting one another. When you lower the exchange rate, when you lower the value of your currency, your exports become cheaper. And this is what American administrations for several decades now have been complaining about. Starting in 2015, they started to say that this is destabilizing. They went to the WTO. And it really comes down to the fact that you can't tell, you know, it's not like these are bankers that will meet in a golf course somewhere. No, this is a state that's doing this. And actually, the devaluation back in 2015 is really what flipped the Obama administration off. This has been going on for a long time. The Chinese can handle it. There's always the threat of inflation, but devaluation is okay when you have high manufacturing, when you have a lot going on. The value can be sustained. The U.S. couldn't do this, at least not without a lot of support from the Japanese and dollars being bought up, which of course the Chinese own. But the issue essentially is making exports cheaper and not having to worry about inflation, which is something a lot of Western governments envy. And they consider it destabilizing because it does increase the trade deficit, which, by the way, went up despite all this tariff nonsense. The trade deficit, the US and China went up the first quarter of 2019.
So because they have a Chinese People's Bank, it's basically a nationalist bank. It's a nationalized bank, which is why we say China is partially nationalist. It's a socialist country that is also partially nationalist. Well, the next article we've got here is scaremongering threats on deglobalization and tariffs. This comes from Global Research. To be self-sufficient may be great for the people of every country on our planet, but it is definitely a crime in the eyes of the West. Now, China is not only independent, but it dares to introduce to the entire world a totally new system in which private companies are subservient to the interests of the state and the people. That's not a new system. That's national socialism. This is the total opposite to what is happening in the West and its client states, where the governments are actually indebted to private companies and where people exist mainly in order to generate huge corporate profits. On top of it, China's population is educated, enthusiastic, patriotic, and incredibly productive. As a result, China competes with the West and it is easily winning the competition. It does it without plundering the world, without overthrowing foreign governments, or starving people. This is seen by the United States as unfair competition, and it is being punished by sanctions, threats, and provocations. Call it a trade war, but it actually isn't. And why unfair competition? Because China is refusing to join in and play by the old imperialistic rules dictated by the West, and also readily accepted by countries such as Japan and South Korea. China does not want to rule, and that scares the West. So do you think he's correct there, that China hasn't got imperialistic ambitions? Because we do see them, in Africa and in India and building, this Silk Road initiative. Do you think he's correct? China doesn't have imperialistic ambitions, Matt?
I think they're satisfied with being regional hegemons. They realize the tremendous expense that goes into a global empire. The Chinese state bank sees an opportunity to undersell the private, you know, Rothschilds in Africa and Latin America and elsewhere and give them much better deals. This is the ideological issue here. And that's why it's so important to us. China is a national socialist state. Willis Cardo said that. I've been saying that for a long time. It's a very racial state. The Han Chinese are the, you know, like 98% of the elite. And this is exactly what a national socialist style economy looks like, with a strong state sector, certainly a private sector too, but the dominant enterprises are at least partially state-owned. And as he says here, the population, educated, enthusiastic, patriotic, and productive. This isn't supposed to happen. The liberal model says that these kind of people are outdated, that they should be more globally oriented, that state-run enterprises are inefficient, that states are inefficient except to, you know, do our bidding. It's not supposed to happen. And yet China, with this national socialist system, has surpassed everyone's expectations. And so not only is this an economic threat, but as I've said many times before, it's a strong ideological threat. Wherever all the different forms of national socialism that's been tried over the decades, wherever it's been tried, it's been a success. I spent so many hours on my show doing it, talking about it here. It's a success, and that's what this is all about.
Well, that's the difference here, isn't it? I mean, you've got a patriotic people here. You've got a people that believe in their nation, that look down on all the other races of the world, so they want to do best for their nation. If you think of before, if you think of communism, international communism, everybody was supposed to be the same, and they were supposed to be workers of the world, unite. And we've still got the tail end of that now, with all the races are equal. The Chinese don't think that. They're all working for the Chinese. Basically, they're putting the Chinese people first, and so is their government. And that is the difference, I think, between the international socialism, because that's the only difference, isn't it? When you've got the state running everything, it's just that this is a patriotic state. And we've also got an article here of what China is being accused of. Critics of China levy several interrelated charges. The loudest complaint is that China steals US technology. Next, there is the accusation that the Chinese state, through its industrial policy, unfairly tilts the playing field by providing subsidies and financing to certain domestic firms. China has used policy to promote industries of the future with some success. For example, China has become the major supplier of solar panels to the world market. A final gripe is that China has a significant sector of state-owned enterprises, some of them in high-tech industries, and some of which actively participate in the global market through exports and foreign direct investment. Critics grumble that China's state-owned enterprises have an unfair advantage due to their state backing. There is an irony to these charges of unfair competition. Neoliberal economic theory holds that industrial policy weakens a country's economy, since it puts the state in the business of making decisions about what economic activities should be encouraged. Decisions, it argues, that only the free market can make effectively. Similarly, neoliberal theory insists that state-owned enterprises are inherently inferior to privately owned ones, and that they will only drag a country's economy down. Yet when confronted with China's rapid advance, neoliberals suddenly forget their fundamental beliefs and start crying about unfair competition. I mean, that sounds pretty accurate to me there, Matt. What do you make of this one?
Well, that's why I included it. Everything that the U.S., and this happens in so many other areas, everything that the U.S. is accusing China of is just a projection, or really a deflection. The U.S. subsidizes its industry. The U.S. Navy is in the South China Sea right now, trying to enforce the demands of American capital. And they're talking about state-owned enterprises. But their ideological myopia is so bad that they can't make any sense out of how a national socialist state with strong state-owned enterprises and, you know, mixed ownership enterprises too can be this successful. And the only thing they could come up with, because this goes against liberalism, is they must be cheating. They must be doing something. They must be stealing. They must be doing something nefarious, because in no way could a country like China be successful, because we all know that state-owned enterprises don't do very well, which obviously isn't true. This is an ideological solipsism and myopia. They don't know what to do with this, and so they have to be cheating. And that's what's at the root of all of this right now.
Well, we need to have some state-owned enterprise. I mean, over here in Britain, we've had a complete fiasco since British Rail was turned over to private companies. We've got the same problems. British Telecom, that was turned over to private companies. And both of them are in a complete mess. You've got the water and the electric that people are being charged an absolute fortune for. And all of that should be subsidized and owned by the state. That's the state resources. That's the country's resources, the country's infrastructure. And it's in private hands. And half of it has been sold abroad. You won't find that in China. That will all be in the hands of the Chinese nation, owned by the Chinese nation. That's why we say they're nationalist more than communist. Well, we've got another article here from the same site, Global Research. The US cannot win the self-imposed trade war against China. This economic tension has already led China to forge better ties with India in a way that might enable both of these countries to counter the trade challenge thrown by Trump. Ahead of Modi Xi summit in April, Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson said that the world is now faced with rampant unilateralism as well as the rising protectionism in the process of globalism. All these trends have been closely followed and debated. So against such backdrop, China and India have a lot to discuss. We are newly emerging markets as well as developing countries with big populations. So we believe the two countries will continue to uphold the globalization so that it is more inclusive, Liu added further. So what they seem to be saying there to me, Matt, is, this is globalization, but it's a different form of globalization. It's a Chinese form of globalization where they're saying it's more inclusive, so you still have your sovereignty. Would that be right?
Yeah, they're not against foreign trade. No, it's an export-driven economy. But one of the reasons I wanted to mention this one is that when you try to shut down or harm the Chinese economy through tariffs, diplomatic maneuvers, even military stuff, they're just going to go elsewhere. And so now they have every incentive now to go to India, which is also growing rapidly, and building greater ties there. Of course, their ties with Russia have always been great. So now you have this huge triangular market, which really is a square now with Iran, you know, very, very strong economies, very high tech, very high value added, highly industrialized, huge and growing markets. And so the U.S. looks very foolish, thinking that it could threaten these countries with tariffs. And the fact is, the American market isn't what it used to be. The Chinese don't trust it anymore. They're not dependent on it anymore. Their domestic market is huge and is growing tremendously in dollar and cents terms. But they simply go elsewhere. It's not like it used to be. American taxpayers, consumers are so indebted and have so little confidence that there just isn't the credit to sop up all the Chinese production that there used to be. It isn't this prize that everyone wants to get into the American market. And obviously you see the tariffs are failing. It's hurt American industry because it's not being done properly. And so, nationalism always deals with other countries with respect, so long as the national local sovereignty is respected. So the Indians, or the Africans for that matter, are going to be far more inclined to trust China than they would the United States. Because they're not dealing with a country, they're dealing with a profit-seeking entity with a deeply ideological agenda.
Yeah, because what we see America doing, there's always ties to whatever the deal is. You know, you've got to legalize homosexuality. You've got to teach children about homosexuality. You've got to have equality if we're going to help you. And who wants that? Nobody wants that in the developing world. So they'd be far more inclined to listen to China. And this is, again, it's like what we were saying about the sanctions, because Russia's done the same thing. And Iran will be, as you mentioned just then, is doing the same thing after being sanctioned. It just encourages these countries to do business with other countries and to develop their own infrastructure, which is of benefit to them. Well, we've got a scholar here explaining how the US-China trade war backfires on American companies. And this is from Sputnik. Meanwhile, the Sino-American trade war has already backfired on US companies. Thus, Apple cut its revenue guidance in early January 2019, referring to weak iPhone sales and pinning the blame on the economic situation in China. The company reduced its revenue forecast from $93 billion to $84 billion, stressing that the slump in purchases happened primarily in Greater China. Likewise, car sales in China have fallen by 6% for the first time in 20 years, while sales of American cars in the People's Republic have declined even more. Over the first 6 months in 2018, Chinese buyers purchased only 400,443 Ford automobiles. This is 25% less than a year before. It is likely that the fall in overall sales will exceed 50% for 2018. Thus, in 2018, China's exports to the United States increased by 11.3%, while exports from the United States to China remained virtually unchanged. As a result, China's trade surplus with the United States hit a record high of $323 billion in 2018, which is 17% higher than in 2017. So it's all backfiring on Trump and on these American companies. I mean, what do you think is the solution to this?
Yeah, not just backfiring, but doing the exact opposite of what it was supposed to do. Devaluing the currency has made up or compensated for any tariff that the Trump administration is going to put on foreign markets, and you know, are taking up a lot of the slack. I wonder though, you know, I have the feeling that the drop in sales has as much to do with uncertainty and not being entirely sure where this policy is going to end up, rather than a direct result of the policy. That's been a huge part of this. Remember, about half the imports coming from China into the U.S. are from American companies, taking advantage of Chinese labor and then, of course, pocketing the profit. You know, if Trump were serious about this, those would be the only ones that he would target, not Chinese-owned companies. You know, if he was serious, he'd say, look, we're going to do everything we can to make your life miserable until you come back and invest in your own people here. I mean, if for whatever reason, let's say there was a massive tariff wall on everything, and international trade with the rest of the world was completely banned, the U.S. has built a huge wall around it. Well, that would be difficult for a while, but that would mean you would have an explosion in entrepreneurship, because now all of those products now have to be made locally. So now you're going to have a rush to invest and develop new companies. Over time, and not that I'm advocating something that crazy, but it would lead to this massive explosion of investment locally. So, you know, Trump is acting as if either Chinese companies that are doing the importing, there are plenty of American firms that are doing this. And he's not mentioning this at all. This is a completely backfiring. It's been poorly done. Although it's still kind of early in the game yet. So the Chinese haven't been hurt. And because they still own about $1 trillion of American debt, you know, they still own all the cards. And they could send all the aircraft carriers to the South China Sea they want. They know that nothing's going to happen there. Chinese have to devalue the yuan a little bit, and that's all they need. And that'll compensate for all of this tariff. This is rhetoric and nothing more.
So really, it should be all or nothing. I mean, it should be banning deals throughout the world, tariffs, sanctions, and concentrating everything on America, or just targeting certain companies to make them come back to America, rather than encouraging the Chinese to just make up for it themselves. Is that what you're saying there, Matt?
Yeah, and that's what Putin has done in Russia, sometimes personally. You know, the famous video of him going to the aluminum company, Oleg Deripaska's place. He was going to leave the country. I think he was going to go to Turkmenistan or something like that. And Putin went in there and said, no, you're not. You're not going to throw these people out of work. And he scared the crap out of them. So he's targeting these people, industries, and actually specific people. You're not going to destroy the economy of this region by doing this for a couple of cents a unit profit. So that's exactly what's happening. That's exactly what you're saying is absolutely correct.
So there's a balance that they have to achieve, basically, between private and state-owned, and they have to keep looking at it. And basically, you have to put the people's needs first. Well, the final article that we've got here, Trump's phony trade war with China. This is from Politico. So contrary to Trump's claims that the Chinese are paying billions of dollars to the U.S. Treasury, the primary economic repercussions of the trade war have been the Chinese companies and consumers are spending far less on American goods, while Americans have been paying a $30 billion annual tax, give or take. If the point of all this was to reverse the trade deficit, force multinationals to shift production back to the US, and stop China from intellectual property theft, then it is hard to call this year anything other than smoke without fire. Well, we've come out with what should be done here, Matt. And I mean, basically it is, isn't it? It's putting the nation first. That's what needs to be done. You always need to be putting your people first. If you're putting your people first, then you're going to succeed. And this is what we see happening in China. This is obviously what Donald Trump needs to do if he wants, you know, if he wants America to succeed. And that was his campaign promise, wasn't it? America first. So why doesn't he do it? Why doesn't he do it? Matt, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Grandpa Lampshade will be here tomorrow on his own with a solo podcast. So until then, God bless and hail victory.
Radio Aryan. Dot.